The man in the lounge chair checked his wrist. The stereo played the amplified sound of tires rolling up the driveway. A woman grabbed three paper bags off the passenger seat. She headed around the house again, taking care to avoid all the mousetraps now guarding the back steps. She left the bags and returned to her car's trunk. This would be a two-trip stop. She removed a heavy box and started back again. She wasn't paid enough not to ask questions.
What the hell does he need a bear trap for?
She assumed she would soon be receiving instructions to avoid that as well. Once the stereo was silent again, the resident retrieved his delivery off the stoop. He opened a bag and took out a new goldfish bowl, then collected his pet from the bathroom. It splashed into the water.
There you go. Then another splash. And there's your stupid fucking castle.
The man had lost faith in the fish.
Don't think I don't know what's going on.
Finally, he opened the box.
Excellent.
He got down on his knees. The bear trap was so strong that it required a special wrench to crank its jaws open into the ready position. He stretched its chain across the floor and padlocked it to an old steel radiator. The resident settled into his lounge chair with a book, a rifle, and a slightly elevated sense of safety. It took almost a whole day. Snap. He fell to the floor with a throbbing ankle.
Shit.
He tried opening the jaws.
They're too strong.
He spotted the wrench on the counter, but the chain wouldn't reach. He tried the radiator, but it wouldn't budge. The only bright side was that this was one of the newer, humane traps with dull teeth. Deep bruising, but no risk of death from blood loss, in case it caught the wrong thing. The resident tested the reach of the chain and found that the kitchen table was in range. He dragged the trap over to a chair and sat down to assess the situation. He looked in direction after direction. The back door was too far away. The phone too far away. The canned food in the cupboards even worse. He opened a pack of baseball cards, stuck the gum in his mouth, and began hitting the keys of a typewriter. Clack, clack, clack. The present. The Nova raced away from a house on 34th Street in Riviera Beach.
What the hell is wrong with people?
Said Serge.
I'm only delivering heritage surprises. That should be happy news.
You're like the history fairy.
Exactly,
said Serge.
If someone comes to their door with a singing telegram, do they shit on them, too?
Maybe you need a costume.
And what was that crazy reaction back there when I asked to come in for only a few minutes and lie down in Kenny's bedroom?
Said Serge.
I clearly explained I knew it was no longer Kenny's authentic bed, but whoever's it was now would be more than sufficient. I even promised to make the bed back up after I got under the covers. Didn't I bend over backward not to be imposing?
You just can't please some people.
Jingle, jingle. Serge reached under his driver's seat and handed a book to Coleman.
What's this?
Our next stop.
Coleman read the title.
Conktown, USA?
Finally released in 1991 by Charles Foster,
said Serge.
Based upon his 1939 photography portfolio, along with groundbreaking Works Progress Administration research performed by Veronica Huss and the eminent Florida file Stetson Kennedy. It lay unpublished and forgotten for more than half a century. The final word on the Bahamian fisherman who founded Riviera.
Cool.
Coleman tried handing it back.
No, I need your help as navigator. Flip to the map in the middle.
15 minutes later, Coleman held the book a few inches from his face.
Okay, turn left at the next corner, I think.
Serge cut the wheel at 21st Street and Avenue C, camera out the window. Click, click, click.
Now make a right, and another right.
Back down 20th. Click, click, click. Then 15th, crossing Broadway. Coleman looked up.
They're all empty lots, except for the boat storage yard.
It's where the first settlers built their houses, Robert Sands Moree, often clapboard and simple wood frame, much less sturdy than the shipbuilders' homes of the other conchs in Key West, but the vegetation is still here.
Okay, trees. Big whoop.
Coleman, much of our state's visual strikingness has been throttled by the shadow of tall, exotic nuisance trees. Not here. See how everything is low, dominated by palms?
Serge began honking the horn.
It's a living canvas of what those early conchs saw every day.
Why are you honking?
You're allowed to honk after your team wins the championship,
said Serge.
This is bigger. I was just privileged to follow in the footsteps of the giant Stetson, renowned author and earlier chronicler of Florida folklore, who studied under Marjorie Kinnan Rawlings of the Yearling fame and traveled the state extensively with Zora Neale Hurston of Their Eyes Were Watching God fame. That's a rarefied club. Florida's version of expatriate Paris.
Honk, honk, honk. Serge, you're just attracting drug dealers. They're starting to block the street.
Don't be so quick to judge.
Serge rolled down his window.
They could simply be history buffs with lots of underwear showing. I'll have a little chat to share the special word.
The Nova's passengers ducked as they screeched away from the mob in the street.
Told you, said Coleman, licking the suction cup and sticking it back on the windshield. They tried to take my cat toy.
At least now I know that drug dealers aren't down with the history fairy.
He cut the wheel as they approached a stucco structure painted a sweet potato shade of orange.
The House of Meats is still here. Our family's old butcher shop. This was still in the sentimental small-town America era before supermarkets. Nothing says land of the free and home of the brave like having to go to a separate building to buy liver.
Now a Jamaican place, Coleman said as it went by. There's a handwritten sign in the window for a whole pig.
Serge uncrumpled a scrap of paper from his pocket.
What's that? Asked Coleman.
I wrote down a second address from another old phone book in the library. This one, 1986.
Serge smoothed it out in the middle of the steering wheel.
I told you how much I dug Kenneth Reese's books. He had this recurring character who was an actual person in real life, a legendary local surfer called the Pope of Palm Beach.
The Pope? Said Coleman. Jesus!
His full name was Darby Pope.
Serge crossed over to the east side of U.S. 1.
Tragically killed under hazy circumstances at the port in the late 80s.
The Nova turned onto a quiet street south of Blue Heron near the bridge. Royal palms and bottle palms and fishtail palms grew wild among the low-slung row of ranch houses with bright, white tile roofs. The Sore Thumb in the middle was an older wooden home that had survived the demolition of the 50s. Its dark brown planks were unpainted, lightly sealed with varnish. The front yard had become a feral pasture of grass and weeds. The Nova rolled up in the driveway.
I called the number from the phone book, but only got an answering machine message from Guido Lopez.
Who's Guido Lopez? Asked Coleman.
The person whose lucky day this is.
Serge hopped out of the car.
Let's rock.
Give me another second.
Jingle, jingle. He snatched the cat toy off the windshield.
I'm ready.
They headed up the stone path to the front door.
I'll give it one last try for the day, said Serge. If these folks aren't totally blown away to hear they're living in the former home of Darby Pope, then they're dead people with a pulse.
He stepped up to the door. Knock, knock, knock. Part 2 Chapter 30 Riviera Beach. Kenneth Reese awoke from a light nap in his lounge chair. Knock, knock, knock. He sprang up and grabbed the rifle.
What the hell was that?
Harder knocking. Bang, bang, bang. What the heck? Nobody had come knocking at his door in years. Well, not nobody. There were the occasional solicitors and urban missionaries who left literature for discount carpet cleaning and the kingdom of God, except it wasn't unique to his home. Those people were hitting all the houses on the street.
Bang, bang, bang!
But this kind of prolonged knocking was specific. Kenny crept slowly to the door and pressed his eye to the peephole. He saw a giant eyeball staring back.
Ah!
He tumbled backward with his rifle. Serge looked at Coleman.
I just heard someone inside. They're deliberately not answering and rejecting the good news. They're not getting off that easily.
He moved sideways from the door.
Bang, bang, bang.
Kenny tiptoed to a window, lifted the towel, and parted the blinds. Serge was staring directly back.
Shit!
He let the blinds snap shut.
What do I do now?
Serge pointed at the window.
Someone was just peeking at us.
What do we do now?
Asked Coleman.
Follow me.
They walked around the side of the house. Serge loped like a ballerina and sliced the air with karate hands.
Why are you doing that?
Asked Coleman. Serge gestured along the edge of the crawlspace.
Look at all those surveillance microphones,
he whispered, pirouetting and high-stepping. Chop, chop.
Something weird is going on.
Microphones?
Coleman bent down.
Burp. Sorry.
They heard the belch amplified through a stereo from inside the house, then a paranoid shriek.
This is more urgent than I thought,
said Serge.
Someone in there might need the good news and my professional lifestyle assistance.
They reached the back steps. Coleman bent down again.
Hey, Serge, look what I almost stepped on.
Snap.
Ow!
Hold still.
Serge pried off the mousetrap.
My thumb's bleeding.
Just wipe it on your shirt. It'll blend with the other blood.
Serge climbed the steps and inspected the door frame.
Reinforced steel to house the deadbolts. No entry here. Let's find a window that doesn't have bars.
Inside, Kenny followed the sounds around the perimeter of the house, tiptoeing with the gun. It had been a brief glimpse out the front blinds, and he had expected assassins to look different, especially the chubby one. He heard a snap. That would be a screen popping loose. He ran to the window over the kitchen sink. Shoot. It was so small and high off the ground that he'd never considered installing burglar bars. He opened the cabinet doors under the sink.
Serge, my back is getting tired,
Coleman said on his hands and knees.
You're heavy.
Stop whining. I'm almost in.
He worked diligently with a thin metal shim. Another pop.
It's open.
He raised the window and squirmed through the tight opening, grappling over the sink and falling headfirst into a tucked roll on the floor.
Hello? Anyone home? I know you're in here.
What about me?
Coleman yelled from the backyard.
You'll never fit. Go back to the side porch and don't pick up anything.
Serge went to the door and undid all the locks, turning the knob.
Welcome. Watch your step. It's dark and the light switches don't work.
Coleman entered with his cat toy. Snap.
Ah! My leg!
What now?
A better mousetrap.
Serge pulled down a towel and opened the blinds.
More like a bear trap. I have to find whoever's in the house. Stay right here.
That was my plan.
Jingle, jingle. Serge wandered room to room.
Hello, Guido Lopez? There's nothing to fear. Everything's normal. It's just the history fairy.
Serge?
Not now, I'm busy.
Another room. Opening closet doors, checking the shower.
Guido, are you there? This isn't healthy.
Serge?
He came back into the kitchen.
What's so important?
Coleman nodded toward the stove. A rifle leaned against the counter. Serge's eyes lowered. He quickly opened the cabinet doors under the sink and jumped back. Hands shot up to shield a face. Someone curled in a ball around the gooseneck plumbing.
Don't hurt me. Nobody's gonna hurt you, Guido.
Serge offered a hand.
We're pacifists. We only fight people who claim they're bigger pacifists.
Serge carefully helped the trembling resident out from under the sink.
Guido, what were you doing under there?
Who's Guido?
You are,
said Serge. He walked over to the phone and pressed a button on the answering machine.
You've reached Guido Lopez. Please leave a message after the beep.
Beep? Oh, yeah. The resident nodded. I get a lot of nuisance calls.
Well, all that's behind you because this is about to become the luckiest day of your life. Are you ready? Hold on to your hat.
Serge had a painfully wide grin as he hopped up and down.
You're living in the home of real-life literary character Darby Pope. Isn't that super?
The homeowner's eyes practically popped out of his head.
What?
Said Serge.
Not super?
Darby Pope, exclaimed the resident. You knew Darby? He was my best friend.
No, I didn't know Darby. Just read about him in these books, but... Wait a minute. You said he was your best friend?
Serge stepped forward to study the man's face, mentally comparing it to book jacket photos.
This actually might be the luckiest day of my life. You wouldn't by any chance happen to be... Kenneth Reese?
Okay, you found me, said Kenny, dropping down into a chair at the table. But I didn't do anything. And I swear I never told anyone.
Stop, slow down, back up, and don't be a spaz.
Serge grabbed the chair across from him.
Now, what exactly are you talking about?
Kenny sniffled.
You're not here to kill me?
Hell no. Besides the pacifist thing, you're one of my favorite authors.
You aren't pulling my leg?
Kenny uncoiled and momentarily set his head on the table.
That's a relief.
Kenny, why did you ever stop writing?
Serge looked around the home's interior.
More important, what's happened to you? You're living like a nut.
Serge, said Coleman, can you help get the bear trap off me so I can enjoy my cat toy more?
Not now. We're in the presence of greatness.
He faced Kenny again.
What's the deal?
This is on the level? You really aren't just a reader?
Only your number one fan.
A heaving sigh of resignation.
Why not? After all these years, I've kept it in so long.
And Kenny began giving Serge the short version, which became the long version. The Greek tragicomedy wrapped up after dark, and Serge whistled.
That's some story. But don't you worry another moment. Serge and Coleman are on the case now.
What case?
Fixing your life.
But I don't need my life fixed.
Serge laughed heartily.
No offense, but ask yourself, what's wrong with this picture?
Jingle, jingle.
Kenny, first we have to get you writing again.
I've been writing.
When?
This whole time.
But I haven't seen any new books at the store since Hank 10.
Oh, I don't get them published, said Kenny. I just write. If you write, it's what you do.
Holy moly, said Serge. You've got unpublished manuscripts lying around?
A few.
How many is a few?
Maybe a dozen.
A gasp as Serge's head rolled back toward the ceiling. He sprang to his feet.
You have to show me. Right now.
Kenny shrugged and walked over to a cabinet, pulling out three full drawers in succession and leaving them open. Serge grabbed his own head, then seized one of the piles of pages and ran back to the table.
I need light.
Kenny lit the kerosene lantern as Serge began flipping through the pile of loose typed pages, his jaw falling lower and lower. Hours passed. Midnight came and went. Serge stopped and stretched.
This is fantastic stuff, even better than the old books. You have to get this published as soon as possible.
No way.
But the public is hungry.
Serge grabbed the manuscript.
Be right back. I'm getting this out to the masses.
Chapter 31. Publish or Perish. Kenny barred the door.
Stand aside,
said Serge.
This is for your own good.
Weren't you listening to that story I just told you? Said Kenny. Somehow, I skated out of that whole mess, and nobody has bothered me for almost 3 decades. Only bad things can come out of attracting any attention to myself, and publishing a book about smuggling at the port couldn't be any more attention.
We'll table that topic for later, but don't think I'm done.
Serge got up and looked around at the towel-covered windows.
I have to get you back in proper mental health. I'm a professional.
Sort of like a psychiatrist?
Emphasis on sort of.
Serge picked up the lantern and walked around like a railroad engineer.
So you mean to tell me you've stayed inside all these years?
I used to put on a big floppy hat and sunglasses in the middle of the night if I really needed something from the convenience store. But too many police are out at that hour, and I haven't renewed my license in forever, so I knocked that off as too risky. My nerves.
But how does the whole thing work?
Asked Serge.
It doesn't seem possible.
I still get royalties from the books that pay for everything, said Kenny. My lawyer takes care of the rest. Banking, taxes, lawn service once in a while. He had a dentist sign a confidentiality agreement, and I pay a lot extra for house calls to get my teeth cleaned, and a doctor for physicals, but those are the only people I see. I didn't realize how much equipment they have to bring.
What about everyday needs like groceries and mail and the all-important new underwear when it's time?
The lawyer has an assistant who brings things by. After all these years, I'm on my 12th deliverer.
Serge jumped up as he heard amplified footsteps from the microphones outside.
What's that?
Just the assistant, said Kenny. Leaves brown bags on the steps.
Serge ran to the door and swiftly flung it open.
Hello, assistant.
A woman was leaning down with paper bags. She leaped back and grabbed her heart.
You scared the shit out of me. Who are you?
Kenny's new life coach.
He waved urgently.
Come on in.
She shook her head.
I'm not supposed to. Just drop the bags and avoid contact. Strict instructions.
Kenny, said Serge. Tell her it's okay.
It's okay, called an unseen voice.
The woman tentatively crossed the threshold.
Actually, I've been making these deliveries for so long that I was dying to know what was going on inside.
Jingle, jingle. She looked down.
Then again.
Serge had entered a rare, laconic moment.
What are you staring at?
Asked the assistant.
You,
said Serge.
You're a mature woman.
What's that supposed to mean?
Most guys are only interested in giggling young twits, but you're the full course. Intelligent, poised, self-assured enough to wear hospital scrubs and a ponytail and not dye that coal black hair blonde. Kind of a Zeta Jones thing going on. Right in the wheelhouse of any thinking man.
You don't even know me.
And unfortunately, I won't get the chance,
said Serge.
If I didn't have this zany travel schedule, I'd ask you out right now. Spare no expense. Because the women who don't carry themselves like they deserve to be pampered are the ones who deserve it most. We'd form deep emotional connections by visiting state parks, landmarks, galleries, reading the same books together. You're not the first woman a guy would pick out in a nightclub, but you have the kind of disarming cuteness and substance of thought that lives on long after the first night of sex and the clumsy morning that follows with fuzzy teeth. But, as I said, I'm a rambling kind of guy, so you'll have to wait for the next man just like me to come along. Sorry.
Do you always talk like this?
Life's short. What's your name?
Chris.
Chris, I have some publishing business to discuss with Kenny.
He took the bags from her arms.
So you'd better be going before you torture me further with beguilement.
Hey, no problem.
She walked briskly out the door and back to her car.
I thought it might be a little strange in there.
But as she drove from traffic light to traffic light in the loneliness of 2 a.m., she found herself thinking more and more about the impromptu visit. Back inside, Serge called out from the living room.
Are these Darby's boards up there in the rafters?
Kenny came around the corner.
Most of them. The last one's mine. You would have liked him.
I said I didn't know him, but we actually did meet once.
You did? When?
At Trapper Nelson's,
said Serge. moving on to inspect the classic titles in the bookcase.
I was just a little kid and stole a canoe at Jonathan Dickinson, then paddled upriver to see what everyone was talking about. Turned into a big commotion because my parents reported a lost kid at the park, which wasn't accurate because I knew exactly where I was the whole time. Anyway, Darby came along.
"Wait," said Kenny. "You were that little kid? I was with Darby that day."
"You were?"
"Yeah. And Darby called the Rangers on the radio to say he was bringing you back. But you took off first, and we had a devil of a time rounding you up. You were a slippery little sucker."
"It's on my resume,"
said Serge, removing a book from a shelf and holding it toward Kenny.
"Your first novel. I love the almost photographic details, right down to the makeshift water tower and hurricane log, just like the day we met."
"Small world," said Kenny, easing himself down into his lounge chair.
"Okay, now I definitely know you're on the level. You're a real local who's read my books. But seriously, what are you doing breaking into my house? What do you want from me?"
"It wasn't in my plans at the beginning of the day," said Serge. "But now that we've had this uncanny introduction, you absolutely have to get your new books published."
"I told you, that's never going to happen," said Kenny. "Just put it out of your head."
"But you won't mind if I finish reading this manuscript and the others?"
Kenny made himself comfortable in the lounger and closed his eyes.
"Go crazy."
Serge grabbed the pile of pages and settled into the other lounger next to the author. He flipped a page, and another. A half hour later...
"Psst, Kenny, are you awake?"
Serge waved a hand in front of his face with no response. He slipped into the kitchen and roused Coleman from a snoring blackout.
"Huh? What? Where am I? I was having a wild dream. These giant house cats..."
"Not now."
Serge grabbed a tool and cranked the bear trap open.
"We have to work fast, before he wakes up."
Serge methodically moved through the house, opening drawer after drawer. Coleman yawned and rubbed his stomach.
"What are you doing?"
Another drawer opened.
"Invading his privacy."
"Isn't that wrong?"
A drawer closed, and another opened.
"Used to be, but now it's the coin of the realm. And forget Big Brother. The NSA has nothing on Google and Amazon. If you want to function at all in today's society, you're constantly checking off agree-to-terms boxes at the bottom of documents longer than War and Peace that nobody can understand, but grant corporations the right to track your roaming habits by satellite, archive your internet search terms, and sell your consumer patterns to boiler rooms in Jakarta. Then you buy one dildo, and a United Nations assembly of sex workers paralyzes your inbox. Here we go."
Coleman looked over his shoulder.
"What is it?"
"Address books, business cards."
Another drawer.
"Unopened mail."
Serge stuffed it all in an empty shopping bag.
"We're on the move."
A green Chevy Nova sat in front of the plate-glass fluorescence of a 24-hour coffee shop. Ka-chung, 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 ka-chung. Pages fed high speed in one side of a machine, and copies spit out the other. Serge stood at a nearby table, the contents of a paper bag dumped out, sifting through addresses and phone numbers. When he had what he needed, he gathered up the copies and made himself comfy at one of the computer stations. Clack, clack, clack.
"What are you doing?"
asked Coleman.
"Writing a letter,"
said Serge.
"The key to letter writing is an opening that won't send your letter directly into the wastebasket. That's what happened when the Apostle Paul first wrote to the Ephesians. Open immediately. You may already be a winner."
Serge finished his missive, printed it out, and signed with flair. In another person's name. He pulled a padded mailer off a shelf and addressed it. He approached the customer service counter. Someone studying calculus looked up from a textbook.
"Can I help you?"
Serge licked the mailer and sealed it.
"Any of those private mailboxes over there still available for rent?"
"Yes."
"I want one,"
said Serge.
"You also mail stuff?"
"Yes, again."
Serge set the packaged manuscript on the counter.
"Mail this,"
Chapter 32 The Next Morning. Upbeat humming from the kitchen. Serge awoke to the aroma of eggs frying in a skillet. He usually arose before dawn to get a jump on the others, but it had been a late night at the copy shop.
What time is it?
He grabbed his watch off the nightstand in a back bedroom of the bungalow.
7 o'clock? The others have the jump.
He jumped, practically landing in his sneakers next to the bed. Serge quickly tied the laces and rushed down the hall. Something stopped him when he reached the living room.
What's going on?
Warm, healthy sunlight streamed through all the windows, blinds open wide. He slowly turned to appreciate the full impact of the space, the array of vintage surfboards hanging from the rafters, that stunning library and the sprawling bookcase, hard pine walls, a painting of a royal poinciana, and finally, in the centerpiece spot over the mantel, the framed black-and-white enlargement of Darby Pope catching a wave in his prime at Singer Island. The smell of bacon.
Who's humming?
Serge's head swung around.
Coleman?
Down here. He crawled out from behind a lounge chair. Didn't make it to a bed again.
What's going on?
Coleman yawned and smacked his lips.
I just tuned in.
The humming grew louder. Then lyrics. I can see clearly now. Serge followed the voice into the kitchen. He stopped again. Kenny was dancing a merry jig as he squeezed juice oranges into a ceramic pitcher, wearing sandals, swim trunks, an old Riviera Beach surf club t-shirt. Serge's brain didn't know where to start. Kenny had told him he usually slept well past noon. Depression and skewed circadian rhythms from all the blacked-out windows in the house. And his appetite had been down to nothing. Something was going on.
Kenny, what time did you get up?
He stuck his hands in oven mitts. Before dawn. Serge inventoried the breakfast menu.
Where'd you get all the fresh meat and eggs?
And citrus. Kenny tossed Serge an Indian River grapefruit.
But you only have cabinets full of all that canned survival food for hydrogen bomb attacks.
Kenny opened the oven and removed a tray of southern buttermilk biscuits. I went to the store.
You mean in the middle of the night? In a disguise?
No, this morning, right after my swim. He set out 3 plates. Help yourself. Serge noticed Kenny's still moist, spiked hair.
Where'd you go swimming?
In the ocean. Kenny unfolded the post-sports section and scooped hash browns with a fork. Coleman poured OJ from the pitcher and added an equal amount of Smirnoff. He grabbed a chair next to Kenny. Serge remained standing.
Sorry if I'm having trouble processing all this.
Oh, and I know you like coffee, said Kenny, munching a biscuit crammed with bacon. I just brewed that pot over there.
What, coffee?
Serge loped across the room and grabbed a mug. Then they were all seated together like family. Serge rapidly alternated between the grapefruit in one hand and a cup of Joe in the other.
Kenny, man, you were a wreck yesterday, and now this. It's such a startling transformation. What happened?
I have you to thank. A big fork of scrambled eggs. What was I doing with my life? What a serious rot.
I've heard of fast rebounds, said Serge, but this is like getting a heroin overdose a shot of Narcan.
You guys were just the kick I needed. Kenny continued chewing like someone who had been rescued at sea. You had so many questions, and once I started talking, the floodgate of memories opened wide, like the Peanut Man.
The Peanut Man? Said Coleman.
Serge and I were jumping from topic to topic. Serge finished off his coffee.
I said, remember that old black guy who sat on the northwest corner of Old Dixie and Blue Heron selling peanuts out of a baby carriage?
He was an institution.
planted there with that stroller for years as if he had taken root on that sidewalk, said Kenny. He was like the unofficial mayor. Everyone knew the Peanut Man.
The midnight blowing of the horn on the SEC Railroad,
Surge continued.
The blinking stacks at the power plant, the Trilon tourist tower, Captain Jack's fishing report, nude Air Force beach. The kids never stopped talking about that one.
Kenny wiped up his plate with one last bite of biscuit and took it to the sink. What a great life I had growing up here. And then I looked around this dank house of despair and thought to myself, what the hell are you doing, Kenny? To think it all started with you breaking in through the window over the sink. I'd been hunkered down terrified of someone coming after me. And when you broke in and nothing bad happened, it was an epiphany. What are your plans for the day? Knock, knock, knock. Surge jumped up in alarm.
Who the hell is that?
Instinctively reaching for his waistband. Kenny remained calm. Talk about role reversal. He headed for the side door.
But Kenny,
said Surge,
why didn't we hear any footsteps through the stereo?
Because I turned off those stupid microphones. He reached for the locks.
Wait,
said Surge.
Are you expecting a delivery?
Not until Friday, and she only comes at night. Kenny undid the bolts.
No,
said Surge.
Don't.
Too late. The door opened. Oh, hi, Chris, said Kenny. What are you doing here? It's not Friday. Chris smiled and lifted the single brown bag in her arms.
It's my day off, and I thought I'd bring a few extra things by.
She angled her head to see around Kenny into the house.
Are your friends still here?
He swung an arm. Right at that table. Join us for breakfast.
Already ate.
She came inside.
Hi, Surge.
Chris!
He jumped up and relinquished his chair. Surge was about to say something, but momentarily lost his vocal cords.
What's the matter?
Asked Chris.
Cat got your tongue?
Coleman pointed with a piece of toast. You're wearing plaid. He dipped it in yolk.
Plaid?
She chuckled.
What's that got to do with anything?
Surge blushed and adjusted his waistband. A forced grin.
I didn't think I'd see you again. Or at least not this soon. Was in the neighborhood.
Coleman raised his hand. I'm Coleman.
Chris,
said Kenny.
What's in the bag?
She began unloading cheese and bread and salads from the deli. Surge looked accusingly at her.
Don't lie. You were planning a picnic, weren't you?
Her turn to blush. She pulled out two bottles.
I got both red and white. Didn't know what you liked.
I don't drink,
said Surge. Coleman lunged with outstretched claws.
Mine!
Everyone stand back,
said Surge, grabbing his wristwatch.
It's a marvel of nature.
Coleman chewed the seal off one bottle, then grabbed car keys from the table and began excavating the cork.
I do actually have a corkscrew, said Kenny, but Surge waved him off.
Coleman finally plunged the last broken chunk down into the bottle, where it bobbed as he upended it for a long slug. He slammed the bottle down.
Time!
Surge pressed a button on his watch.
23.4 seconds.
But Chris was still gazing at Surge.
So what are you up to today?
Depends on Kenny. He's made a remarkable breakthrough. Kenny, what's on the slate?
I'm going surfing.
I surf too,
said Surge.
Great memories of carrying my board through the colonnades and seeing John D. MacArthur in the coffee shop all the time.
It's amazing he managed his vast empire from that table, said Kenny. So where do you want to catch waves?
The pump house?
You do know the area, said Kenny.
I surf too, said Chris.
You're a surfer chick?
Said Surge.
Oops, I didn't mean anything by chick. Grew up in a different era. But I had total respect. Like Eleanor Roosevelt, Susan B. Anthony, and Mother Teresa. Incredible chicks.
Coleman raised his hand. I surf.
You do not,
said Surge.
Do too.
When?
All the time, said Coleman. When you're not around.
You lie.
Kenny clapped his hands hard. Guys, are we surfing or not?
Just one second.
Serge faced Chris.
This is a test, like in the movie Diner. The Peanut Man?
Corner of Blue Heron and Dixie.
You're in.
Serge turned to Kenny.
Surf's up.
Kenny grabbed a step stool, and they got the boards down for the first time in ages.
We'll only need three of them, said Serge.
I do too, Surf, said Coleman.
What's the harm?
Kenny asked Serge.
Trust me when I say the possibilities are endless.
None of the vehicles had racks, so they used beach towels and rope to lash the boards to the roofs. Kenny was up first at the pump house, riding a strong wave off the sandbar like he'd never left the place. Then it was Chris's turn, timing the next wave and standing up in a one-piece black and turquoise bodysuit. Even Kenny was impressed by the agility of her cutback.
It's been a while, said Serge. Nobody laugh.
He stood up on his board in front of a small wave. No moves or anything, just maintaining balance, which was no small feat. Then, from the other side of a swell,
"Okay, here I come," yelled Coleman.
It was a larger wave than usual, and Coleman suddenly appeared bobbing in the water with an inflatable swim ring around his stomach. The ring had the head of a seahorse and a built-in beverage holder.
Yabba-dabba-doo!
He expertly crested the wave, drinking a beer mixed with salt water. The foursome swam back out again, and they rode the next wave back in again, then the next wave and the next, each member of the gang pretty much executing the same respective styles, except Coleman was now drinking pure salt water. An hour later, they all hit the sand hard, wiped.
Man, I forgot how much the water and sun take it out of you, said Kenny,
lying back with his head on a rolled-up towel, smiling like the kid he used to be. Serge opened a beach umbrella and rammed it in the sand. Coleman opened a beer cooler and shotgunned. Chris opened a paperback and found a dog-eared page.
What are you reading?
Asked Serge. She turned the book over to show.
MacDonald, The Long Lavender Look.
Johnny D.,
said Serge.
I've read that whole series, twice, forward and back.
Chris turned a page.
I'm 10 books in, 11 to go.
Allow me.
Serge unrolled a beach towel.
You shouldn't have to lie in the sand.
She brushed herself off and was about to lie down again.
Where'd you get that thing?
What? It's my favorite towel.
It's ancient. One of those old maps of Florida with little symbols illustrating what each area is known for?
She got on her hands and knees.
This is so cool. There's a mermaid, water skier, Bock Tower in the middle, oranges and alligators, naturally, lighthouse in Key West, Deco Hotel in Miami, race car in Daytona. You can tell how old it is because there isn't a rocket yet at Cape Canaveral.
Serge became awkwardly coy.
I could show you my viewmasters.
That's the worst line I've ever heard to get me in bed.
Me? I? What?
She laughed and lightly touched his arm. Sparks.
I love old viewmasters.
Kenny hopped up.
This is too great a day. I'm going back in.
Me too,
said Coleman, grabbing a beer and blow-up seahorse.
Grab the end of my board, said Kenny. I'll tow you out.
Serge watched the waves.
Now that's a pairing I didn't see coming.
You used to live around here?
Asked Chris.
This very town.
Serge pointed north.
I remember first coming to that beach when I was in diapers and a playpen. I mean, I remember the photos.
She began unconsciously twirling her hair with a finger.
So, tell me about this big literary tour of yours.
Okay.
Serge plopped down next to her cross-legged.
It's really cool.
The sun began to fade, and so did the surfers. They packed it all in and secured the boards back on the roofs. "Meet you at the house," said Kenny. "We can shower, and I just read about this fantastic locals bar with the coldest beer for miles. They put bags of ice in the pitchers." Coleman dove into Kenny's vehicle.
"See you in a while," said Serge. "I'm going to give Chris the hometown tour."
They crossed back over the big bridge and parted ways.
"There's St. Francis, where I was an altar boy. There's my Little League field. There's where I launched rockets. Here's my house, where I climbed on the roof when I was 6 by shimmying up the old TV antenna. Here's the storm drain access point where I explored under the city. That used to be Jack's coin shop, where I got a little carried away about pennies. That Walgreens used to be the town theater where the nuns took us to see The Sound of Music, because it's the only movie where nuns defeat Nazis."
The Nova arrived back at the bungalow as Kenny was slipping into a golf shirt.
"What a great day. Coleman's hilarious. We're heading out for dinner. Want to join us?"
The couple glanced at each other.
"Both of you are going out for a while?" asked Serge.
"Hell yes." Coleman hoisted a beer. "This town rocks."
Chris stretched.
"We're a little tired from the day."
"Yeah,"
said Serge.
"Probably watch TV and order something."
"Suit yourself."
Kenny grabbed his wallet.
"If you change your minds, we'll be at the Brass Ring. Come on, Coleman."
"Surf's up."
The door closed. 5 minutes later...
"Yes, yes, 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 yes."
"I take it you're happy?"
"Don't stop, don't stop, don't stop. Stop. Switch places."
"What?"
"Switch! Now! Hurry!"
The headboard banged.
"On the floor."
"What?"
"Yes, yes, yes."
She hopped up and turned around.
"Against the dresser."
"What?"
"Yes, yes. I hope I'm not throwing too much at you."
"Consider me your Golden Glove shortstop."
"Good."
She ran out of the room, her voice echoing back.
"The kitchen table."
Dishes broke. A woman shrieked in rhythm and arched her back, then collapsed. She hugged him with wet, matted hair.
"That was unbelievable."
"Oh, but we're not done," said Serge. "My turn to call the offense."
"What?
Where's your plaid shirt?"
"Right here."
"Back to the bedroom."
"Yes, yes, yes."
Serge leaped off her and ran into the living room.
"Help me get down the surfboards."
"Yes, yes, yes."
Serge jumped up and ran to the bookshelf.
"This is one of my favorite positions."
He got back on top of her and opened a novel next to her head.
"You're going to read?"
"If you haven't tried it, you have no idea what you're missing."
"Yes, yes, yes."
"The first time Yossarian saw the chaplain."
A half hour later, the front door opened.
"We're back," yelled Kenny. "Hope you kids behaved yourselves."
The pair were reclined in respective lounge chairs, eating popcorn and watching a black-and-white movie.
"Just having a nice, boring evening," said Serge.
Kenny laughed.
"We didn't."
"I'm really sorry," said Coleman.
"I told you not to worry about it," said Kenny.
"What happened this time?"
asked Serge. Kenny was still chuckling.
"We hopped over to the polo lounge, and Coleman climbed up on the bar and started doing the tequila dance."
"I've seen that in a bunch of bars," said Serge. "The patrons love it."
"Except it's not that kind of bar, and they weren't playing tequila," said Kenny. "In fact, everyone was staring in silence."
"Until I broke some stuff," said Coleman. "Sorry."
"It's all good," said Kenny. "I greased the bartender and said he was a Kennedy. For some reason, I'm not tired at all. Coleman, nightcap back at the ring?"
"We rock tonight!"
They ran out the door. Serge and Chris both looked at the plaid shirt sitting on the table between them, then raced each other down the hall. And that's how it went, the next day and the next. The bonding of the odd quartet. Chapter 33 The Next Morning. Cars honked. Cops rode horses. Cab drivers cursed. Corner vendors tongued hot dogs into buns. All in a New York minute. Just below Central Park, near the Carnegie Deli, a 50-story office tower rose in midtown Manhattan. A double-decker sightseeing bus drove by. A statue of Marilyn Monroe with a blowing dress stood over a sidewalk grate. A delivery truck parked, and a large rolling bin took the elevator to the third floor. The bin arrived in a spacious, open room where everyone was on their feet and on the move. Someone upended the bin, dumping its contents onto a long steel table surrounded by employees efficiently sorting the pile of letters, large envelopes, and boxes of all shapes. As they say, many successful people get their start in the mailroom. Many more just become unpleasant. A young man named Lupus had a cheap apartment across the river in Jersey and dreams of producing a one-man off-Broadway show on the Helsinki Accords. He wheeled a smaller bin out of the mailroom and up to the 49th floor, making the rounds down corridors of busy window offices. People on the phone, on the computer, holding meetings. They all briefly looked up from their tasks and smiled as the day's mail arrived, and if they were asked a moment later if they had smiled at Lupus, they wouldn't be able to tell you. The bin arrived at a corner office, and a regular stack landed on a desk. Neil Toth was a respected senior editor who specialized in non-fiction naval history and Southern lit. It was a half hour before he got around to opening the mail. Toth was as hard-nosed as they came, and he turned into a little kid. Running out into the hallway and calling to everyone in earshot, "You have to see this!" A major publishing house is not known for hallway screaming, and a curious group collected in his doorway.
"What is it?"
Toth held a stack of pages over his head in triumph.
"Kenny's back!"
"Who?"
"Kenneth Reese!"
The older editors knew, and the younger ones were filled in.
"Oh, that Kenny," said a celebrity cookbook editor. "But I thought he was dead."
Toth shrugged.
"Who knew what happened to him?"
Indeed. Toth had been a young editor when he began working on Kenny's series of Florida books, and now he was one of the oldest. Back then, everything was fine, until the fourth book came due. They had already started designing the dust jacket. Kenny wasn't answering his phone. At first, nothing seemed off. When authors were writing, they were notoriously hard to reach, often checking into motels with typewriters to avoid disruption. Happened all the time. But then a few days of no contact became a month. They tried his agent, who reported the same difficulty. Time went on, and the deadline was long past. Urgent phone calls and mail went into a black hole. They were just about to call the police when a certified letter arrived from an attorney informing them Kenny would not be writing any more and that all further communication should be directed to his law office. Writers were strange cats, complaining about the color of their name on the cover, shouting about the size of their author photo on the back flap, or simply unexplained crying when an editor picked up the phone. But this was another league. Kenny had been at the height of his popularity, and never a disagreement. An editor's dream. Who stops then? The publisher and agent had tried everything to bring Kenny back into the fold, even flying down to meet with the attorney, but he was resolute. They didn't lose hope, continuing the overtures every month or so for the next 3 years. Then the attempts became less and less frequent, until they lost hope. Lives had to move on. Goodbye, Kenny, wherever you are. The 80s became the 90s, then the new millennium. Rumors, myths, mystery. a ghost.
"He's back!"
Toth repeated. "But how do you know it's really him?" asked a book tour scheduler. "It could be a hoax. Remember the Howard Hughes thing?" "I was skeptical, too," said Toth, looking down and flipping pages. "You can try to mimic a writer's style, but this is spot on. If anyone should be able to tell the difference, it's me." "Any reason for the turn of events?" "Just this odd cover letter." Toth held it to his face. "Says he's sorry he hasn't called, except he was out of communication on an eastern journey to find himself, and he discovered the key to life. You will never really find yourself, but never stop trying."
"Sound like Kenny?"
"No, but neither does pulling a Jimmy Hoffa." The editor set the page down gently on his desk calendar. "He ends by saying he's ready to jump back into the game and gave me a phone number to use day or night."
"You haven't called it?"
"Not yet. I'm still dazed."
"What do you say after all these years?"
"After whatever the hell happened to him." Toth picked up the phone. "Could I have the room, please? And close the door." Everyone left, and the editor stood there so long just holding the undialed phone that it started that obnoxious beeping when you don't dial in time. He hung up and grabbed it again. He began dialing. A green Nova cruised along the beach on Highway A1A.
"And here's another way to fight back against the man," said Serge. "Say you have a reservation at a motel and something comes up that's not your fault, like remembering there's an eclipse in the Keys or having to sanitize a crime scene, especially if it's yours. You can't just go through life leaving DNA material for the next person."
"It's not how we were raised."
"And you have to cancel the room, but it's past cancellation time and you're going to lose your money."
"But Serge," said Coleman, "what can one person do?"
"This is why you always stay at National Chains," said Serge. "They won't let you cancel, but they will let you reschedule. So you call the 800 reservation number to say your business itinerary has changed because you landed the huge Mongolian zinc mine account and need to move your reservation from Monday to Thursday. They happily agree, which also moves your cancellation time, and you just call again the next day and ditch the room without penalty."
"That's pretty clever," said Coleman. "Only one thing. You agreed to the cancellation rule when you first booked the room, so isn't that dishonest?"
"Doesn't matter," said Serge. "The whole reservation process is adversarial. They have all these rules that you're forced to accept or sleep in the woods. Does that sound right? Yet they can break their own rules anytime they want with two simple words. I once tried to use a perfectly valid coupon. Sorry, we don't honor those. We're independently owned. They wave the phrase around like a magic wand. Another time, I'd like the late checkout that's a benefit of my platinum status. Sorry, independently owned. And there's no mention about any of this on the website when you commit. How did that start? That's why I always wait until the staff is watching to abuse ice machine protocol. Hey, the sign says not to fill coolers. Sorry, I'm independently owned."
A cell phone rang, and Serge grabbed it.
"Hello?"
"Is this Kenny Reese?"
"Who's asking?"
"Your old editor, Neil Toth."
"Oh, hi, Neil. I've been expecting your call. How's it shaking?"
"Good grief. You're acting like we just talked the other day," said the editor. "I'm still in shock that I received your package.
Better late than never."
A pause. "Your voice sounds different."
"What do you expect after all these years?" said Serge. "Your voice sounds different too, Ned."
"It's Neil."
"Right, Neil. So what did you think of the manuscript?"
"I was floored. Your best yet," said Toth. "We're going to rush this right out in time for the holidays."
"Sounds great," said Serge.
From the passenger seat,
"Nobody expects the dildo."
"Shut up, you idiot."
Serge pointed importantly at the phone.
"It's New York."
"What was that?" asked the editor.
"Is everything all right?"
"Couldn't be better."
"Glad to hear," said Toth, "because I have something big to ask. Hope this isn't too much all at once, but would you, say, be up to doing a book tour?"
"A book tour?" said Serge. "Can't think of anything I'd like more. Sign me up. My only request is that I reserve my own motels. I have special tricks."
"No problem," said the editor. "And forgive me if I'm still a little off here, but this is all so out of the blue.